Lead UX, the User Experience Leadership Circle, hosted by Dr. Thomas Führinger Kuhn. All right, warm welcome to Lead UX, the UX Leadership Circle, your compass for navigating the ever-evolving landscape of UX leadership and UX maturity in organizations. My guest today is David Byron, Director of Innovation Strategy at Sandberg Farrar. Welcome to the show, Dave, and great to have you.
Thanks, Thomas. Glad to be here.
Could you first of all introduce yourself to our listeners and describe your current role at Sandberg Farrar?
Sure. I'm Director of Innovation Strategy at Sandberg Farrar, and we're in the Metro Detroit area. I've been a Detroiter by choice for 23 years. I grew up on the East Coast, and I moved to the Motor City to be a car designer. And I spent the first half of my career in the automotive studios doing that, and then had a little hiatus for 2 years when the market crashed in like the 2008-2010 range, and I did sports equipment. And then I found out about this studio here in Detroit that does everything. And that's what drew me to Sandberg Farrar. The diversity in 10 years has been amazing. I've worked on everything from cars that can walk and UX, UI systems on in-vehicle infotainment. And had my time getting to do appliances and tools at Home Depot and senior living centers and just things that, really stretch my creative juices and get me curious. I'm always learning, and that's what I love about Sandberg Farrar.
Great. Yeah, it sounds fascinating. So this directly brings me to my next question. You partially answered it already. So why do you get up for in the morning, or what do you get up for in the morning, and what motivates you to work in the field of UX?
I love creating meaningful solutions. I love the art and sculpture side of industrial design, and that's where I went to school at CCS and got a BFA and it's a fine art degree, and I love that side of the look of things. I'm obsessed with aesthetics, and yet as my career went on, I also then started to ask more important questions about how well does this work and do I even like this experience. And that experience to me is broad. I think that's from the hands-on product design side, from physical design, and the interactive side, the UI. And so all of those just kind of connected ecosystems and finding solutions that mean something to somebody and kind of create an emotional pull is what drives me to always keep making something new and keep learning.
Yeah, I also think, yes, this emotional side of things, this is really crucial in our area of expertise. So what has been your personal UX highlight lately?
Project-wise, or you mean an experience out with someone else's product?
Whatever you like to describe first.
Okay, let's see. Like, experience-wise, I took a long 2-week trip to Europe this summer with my family. So I've got my wife and a 10-year-old daughter, and we wanted to hit up some cities we had not been to yet in Europe. And it doesn't surprise everybody, I'm sure, but Google Maps just continued to blow my mind how well it worked, how quick it worked. And what I really like about it is that there were moments where I was debating the mode of transportation, because you're in these multimodal cities in Paris and Barcelona. And I'm like, you know what, do we get back on the subway, or do we get on a bus, or do we call Uber? And Google's brought them together so well that I could quickly consider the different options. And it really surprised me how even accurate it was to estimating a bus arrival time at the bus stop. I mean, not only could I find the bus stop consider three different routes to choose from. And then it would say, if you go to this stop, that bus will be there in 2 minutes. And no joke, I mean, it was within 10 seconds, the arrival time. So when I'm trying to make those decisions quickly in a big city with you know, two family members kind of relying on me to tell us where we're going, that was a lifesaver. And it just was the next level of pushing it to the limits that I had experienced. And I just was amazed at how well it worked.
Yeah, I definitely get this point. So multimodal transportation is really also a challenge for the navigation systems that I usually work on. And yeah, I experienced the same. So for last mile navigation, I also usually switch to Google Maps because it's accurate, it's up to date, yeah, and life-saving sometimes. You're right. So, and yeah, project-wise, any highlights?
Project-wise, we've spent many years working on different mobility vehicles rooted in robotics. And so one of them recently, we had a challenge to try and figure out how do you control a really complex robotic vehicle. And so we approached it more from a video game development perspective, and brought in an entertainment video game designer, and he and I worked together and scripted a sim, basically. And we went through the whole process of, okay, well, how do I control this vehicle with a steering wheel, like an F1 style driving sim, or if it's with your keyboard, or if you're at a kiosk at a trade show and you're trying to just do a quick demo, do you limit and reduce the amount of controls you want to give because you're only going to get 5 minutes, you don't want to overwhelm somebody, and can you plug in a PlayStation game controller? So we mapped out the whole logic and flow of the control system and then turned that into a fully demo ready video game simulator. And so I did all the layout for like the garage to build up the vehicle options, and then what information is on screen when you're in the mode of learning, and then how do you slowly introduce more complex information as the user, let's say, trains on and actually gets real skills versus just that 5 minute demo. So that was a really awesome project, and getting to work with a real game designer was a stretch for me. But deciding how much information is on screen and what's necessary at any given moment is something I love to do.
Yeah. Gamification is definitely also an important, not only buzzword, but strategy in our area. The only question is if you talk then to the stakeholders and the UX leaders you work with, do you experience sometimes sort of a friction or fear that they would not buy into innovative modes of experience design?
I think because you said fear of buying in. I think the fear comes maybe in a project like that, where one instinct is to want it to do a lot. So you can stretch your investment and get real life applications to maybe users that are going to actually train or learn on it. And at the same time, the sales team or marketing team wants to demo it. And that is something that needs to be simplified and quick interactions. And someone's only going to get their hands on it for 3 minutes. And when you get something that's pretty complex on the back end, or can get really complex, how do you grow that experience from what is just a complete blank canvas? I don't even know what this vehicle does for the first 30 seconds. So that to me is the challenge of, you might have leadership wanting both things out of the same product. So that's really the balancing act of getting getting that to serve both needs, extreme and simple, you know, maybe demo upfront sales purposes.
Mm. So what competencies do you think a UX leader or director of strategy like yourself needs to work with these different stakeholders?
Okay, so from you say from the leadership perspective, I think it's really critical to get the different, let's say, the different groups within your organization that are going to have a stake or going to use your product. They need to really all buy in to the val props at the beginning. Why does this exist? Who is it for? What are the goals? And maybe even break that down into functional and emotional attributes. How do we all expect people to feel when they engage our product? And how should it function for the different users, like we just talked, a simple entry-level user or a novice up to an expert? And so marketing and engineering and sales teams, they all really should be at the table. And you should have those discussions before you actually get into the tactical wireframe and development and putting, you know, pixels down and getting into that, actually executing it. I want everybody to be on board on what the goals are and the vision. So that way, when we get back to critiquing it as a group, we're in alignment on did we actually meet what we all agreed upon was the goal and the deliverable at the beginning. So to me, that's from a leadership perspective. It's maintaining alignment and making sure everybody, you know, all the troops are marching in the right direction, looking at the same goal from day one, really.
Mm. Yeah, this describes a way of working in organizations which are already at a certain level of UX maturity, because everybody's thinking in the way you described. The starting point is thinking about user needs and working towards that goal. Do you have any strategies working with organizations which UX maturity level is not at this stage?
I think within any project, since we are a diverse design firm, we do often work with organizations that are even startups. We work with startups. And yet we also work with large organizations who say to us, we want to move into a different area of innovation because we've kind of maxed out the category we're in right now. And you can say that's basically new learnings and an infant organization, even if it's a mature group, they're just going into something totally, totally new they know nothing about. And I think in all those instances, it's all about being open to learning. Can you as a group first admit you don't know everything and have a little bit of humbleness to reflect on your own tools and talents, and to actually get a group to document what they're good at and what they're not good at is a really healthy exercise to begin any project. So I think that's important right there with organizations is, I want to know what you are good at. Let's be very clear. And actually that'll turn into some really interesting conversations, right? If you actually get a group of people that have been at a company for, you know, whether it's 2 years or 20 years, and get that person who's been there for two and get that person who's been there for 20 and actually get them to agree on what their company is actually good at, that turns into some really hot and heated debates sometimes. But if you can't start with agreement on here's what we do well and here's what we don't do well, then how are you going to maximize that capability and then try and fill in the gaps or, you know, grow your capabilities or decide, well, this project's just not going to succeed because we don't have the ability to do that, or we need to partner with somebody, or this is an M&A, we need to go make an acquisition. So those are some of the things that we try and do when we're doing more strategy-focused projects is get to those, let's say, gap alignments and try and make recommendations on what you should, what you can do to actually get a project done. Even if you have a great idea, I don't know if you can do it sometimes. And that's a honest conversation that I find actually very hard for a lot of people to have.
Yeah, so is this a starting point with all the clients you work with? Or is it more for only for the strategy projects?
I think, is it a starting point? Yes. I think we have that conversation in the planning stage. Some projects come in our door, though, and are very tactically minded. Like, here is what we know is our problem. We have this technology. We need to improve this mechanism, and we go to our prototype shop, or we have this screen on a medical device in a lab, and it needs to say, and it needs to communicate this objective and get through these tasks. And so sometimes they're very straightforward, and I would say it is more on the ground level, true conceptual development project work, where we need to have those tools and talents types of conversations. So we do get both ends of the spectrum that we get to work on. And so, yeah, definitely when they're more tactically driven, we're already making the assumption that they have written a brief, they know what they can do, they know what they can't do, they've identified a goal, and we just get into getting it done. But the strategy and more experience design, service design, like holistic system design, you've got to have those internal reflection conversations in the planning stage.
Mm. Yeah, I assume you also have clients who you work with for quite some years already. Have you seen them developing then throughout the years and raising awareness about what they do not know, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is a known challenge in the consulting world. Is sometimes you work yourself out of a job. So to me, sometimes we actually build multi-year relationships with clients, and they learn how to innovate, and they start off not knowing how. And through working with us, I feel like we've done a great job. If 5 years later, a department of two I've seen a department of two become a department of 20, and they build that internal skill set, and then eventually, we might not hear from them for a couple of years. And then they come back and say, oh man, we really miss working with you guys. We need to do something, and we've got this area we need to grow in. But I find that really a success, actually, when multi-year relationships grow to the point where they can execute and do it on their own. I'm really proud of those.
Yes. I mean, for sure, in the end, it's all about the product, which is great for the end users, and if they can do it on their own and don't need consultancy, even better, maybe.
Yep.
So, talking about a time frame, you said 5 years later or so. What's the, to your experience, the time frame an organization needs to really develop to the next level of maturity of user experience design? Is it even measurable in years? I don't know.
Oh yeah, that's difficult. I mean, measurable to say that they've got internal UX capabilities. It's pretty quick, the speed with which you can design and iterate. I think a lot of the projects we've worked on, though, are rooted in longer lead physical products. So usually the UX is much quicker than the hardware it's going on. So whether it is the automotive stuff that we've worked on, that vehicle's turnaround cycle is 3 years. And so there's a lot of lead time for the UX to have actually the ability to critique it. I think it's nice because the UX team can iterate and prototype and put it in a sim and test eye tracking and test reaction time and really perfect it while the interior design team or the hardware team is, following their longer lead timeline. So I find it when you have the luxury of more time because of the physical pairing, that's a great ability to really improve upon it. And I think at some point, actually, what I see teams doing is getting a little stalled out. And so then it's really kind of catching up. I mean, you get to that point where you, like, you've been working on a system and a year and a half goes by and the hardware still isn't ready and you're kind of done. And now all of a sudden a new technology comes out and you sit there and you're like, oh, I would, if I started over today, I would completely redo this. I would just execute in a totally different way. And what we just finished is already outdated. So that's what's really great about the UX side of it, is that now you can put a team into cycling that over again and give it a fresh update.
Mm. All right, perfect. Now, if we change gear a little bit and more start talking about team development and things like that and different roles in organization, so do you think for the leadership of UX topics, is it important to move to organizational development rather than working on the product development side of things to grow the organizational level also?
To grow the organizational competency, you're saying, the leaders should be focusing on the team, the design of the team? I think that's what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. So, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you have great people, the great products will just, they'll come. Mm-hmm. You know, I've no doubt if you have great people working together, they will come up with great solutions. If they're empowered and they're in a system that enables that. So the leadership should be designing the organizational structure, the team itself, the interaction model between different departments. That's what the leadership should focus on, in my opinion, and less on having their hands in the product, because the team that you hire will no doubt get it done.
And often sometimes what I experience is that it's hard for experienced UX people not to get their hands dirty anymore and work on all the nitty-gritty details and really give the freedom to the team. This is really challenging for some leaders who are in the field for quite some years, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just understanding the collaborators, the enablers, the facilitators, however you want to define, you know, people that are collaborating are the ones that should be executing and defining and doing the project work. And whether the leader wants to say they're a facilitator or an enabler, they're the ones that are basically making sure they put the right people in the right place. And you got to know your people. You got to know your talent. You got to know your team. And there's designers that want to be headphones on and just executing, and that's what they're happy doing. And they will sit there and mull over every little detail and every animation or every graphic. And you need people on your team that can do that. But sometimes those personality types that are happy in that role don't take a 30,000 foot level view of a project and say, are we actually, you know, hitting the mark, because they're just really focused on the execution of something very specific and tactical. So you got to know, you got to have those people on the team as well that can look at it from a user perspective. And just, again, back to those emotional points, like, is this going to make somebody feel happy? Is that our goal? Are we trying to deliver a nuance around excitement, or are we trying to deliver confidence, or is this rooted in safety? Like, this needs to make a person feel safety. There's a difference between a functional way to execute a safe solution, but did they actually feel safe and trust you? So the person who's thinking about that is going to be very different than the person who's thinking about the latency and how fast a graphic shows up.
Yeah.
So to me, when we're thinking about leaders, right, those are the leaders who have to understand who's doing what, how are they doing that, and then the great work will happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So right people for the right job, more or less. That's what it's
right, required. Exactly.
Yeah. Anything else from your point of view, which is important to build a strong UX team and also to strengthen the role of the UX team within an organization?
Hmm. to strengthen the role. Okay, so within any, I've been on the OE side, like I said, in the first half of my career, and I think sometimes the bigger the organization, the challenge I felt that I also saw around me, and then I still have friends and I work with the larger OEMs, is that the designers often feel like they do a very small piece of the entire process. And it's true. When you have 200 designers, they're all doing very, very, very small pieces of the entire process, and they're doing their piece and handing it off to the next person. The next person hands it off to the next person. And when you're at smaller companies, you know, the designers have to do more and sometimes the entire product themselves, and they feel burdened and overwhelmed for very different reasons. And so I think the challenge within larger organizations is to keep the team members aware of what's coming down the pipeline that will end up on their desk, and then what they're doing as it ends up on the next person's desk, you know. And so the perspective of the whole process, even when you have to really divide it up to experts doing many, many, many small pieces of a big system, the perspective is the leader's job to make sure everybody knows what's coming down the pipeline. Why is it coming? Because that's probably the most frustrating thing I've heard most peers say is, I got to do this because just somebody told me to. This is what came in. I got to get this done, pass it on to the next person. And that just leads to apathy. It leads to a lack of focus. And then it just becomes a task to get done versus we're working together to get this amazing solution out the door. So that's what I would recommend to large organizations is perspective and clarity of the vision so that every single team member knows why they're doing what they're doing and how much value it is to the overall process.
Mm-hmm. Would this also be a recommendation for companies to keep and attract talent? At least here in Europe, we are facing challenges regarding lack of talent that we would need to really get our job done properly.
Yeah, I would hope that would lead to talent retention, because it's the exact point I was saying about just trying to reduce the apathy of turning the job into mundane tasks when someone's just handed a task, do this and then go on. I mean, I think that's the root of knowing each person has a critical role. There's purpose in what they're doing. They know why they're being asked to do something. And that's the psychology of motivation in general and how to build a strong team. So I would hope that if you were actually designing your team, as we were just talking about leaders designing the team, that you would consider that a root of why people find value and stick around.
Mm. And you mentioned purpose of what people are doing, and this brings me to another topic, which is Gen Z and their expectations towards the professional job world. So do you see any challenges coming from younger people with different expectations entering the job market, especially in UX maybe?
Different expectations. I think it's great to have a team that's mixed. That I think is critical, and that there can be senior level people, you know, Gen X or Gen Yers even, that are still hands-on in the execution, because they can be principal designers, expert designers, and mixing them in the same team is really critical. So you have a little bit of wisdom with a little bit of fresh and speed that you get out of the younger talent that is just coming in with a hyper speed, focus, and ability to execute. I think that speed to execute sort of slows down as we get older. So that's the benefit I'd see in the younger designers come in, like the interns we have and our new hires. Like, they're just so fast. In that speed, sometimes they don't have the wisdom to catch everything or just understand the nuance of what they're doing. But I think that's really interesting to make sure that you keep that for that dual, you know, mixed age perspective. But I think in the Gen Zers, what I find it really interesting is just as a psychological observation is their assumption that there's suspicious activity always there. You know, they just inherently know about bots. And I just heard a conversation recently and they just were looking at something and assumed it was being generated by a bot. And I don't, you know, I know people my age and older, just they don't go to that instinct that quick. And so the younger gen, just they've grown up with it. They're familiar with it. They're suspicious of everything. For very different reasons than my mom and dad, who are in their 60s and 70s, would be suspicious. I don't think if you even said the word bot to my mom, she would even know what that is. But here the, you know, 22-year-old college graduates, they can recognize that almost bot behavior and see it in whether it's social media or within AI now tools. And so that suspiciousness is actually something really to value. Because they can catch it.
And were they right? Was it a bot created conversation in the end? Or I mean, maybe they are a suspicious person.
I don't know if that specific conversation recently, I could tell that they were okay. Right or wrong, but their ability to quickly identify it and then just instinctively question it. It's just fascinating to see the younger generation coming in. And being influenced by AI and all the, you know, all the bot activity that's out there, and what is real, what is human generated, what's not, what's authentic, what does it matter if it's authentic? Those kinds of questions they are having, and have a unique perspective.
Yeah. So it definitely adds something to the team having a mixed age group. Experienced and younger people on board. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they also really have really strong expectations on like mentorship. Mm-hmm. We did a round of hiring and I heard more candidates in our interview process. This was for an entry level junior position. So it was, you know, everybody was about 22 to 25 years old. And I had never heard so many young candidates specifically without even being asked, ask what their mentorship plan would be.
Yeah.
What was our plan to mentor them and grow their skill set? And, you know, I think that's an assumption that I would like to say is a good company and a design thinking empathetic company that we do that naturally, but I had never overtly heard, and I've been in many, many interviews for years now, I've never just heard that many candidates come at that with intent on their own. And I think maybe that's post-pandemic. I think that kind of became part of the consciousness is if I'm working hybrid or working remotely, I don't want to miss out on how I can grow within the organization. And I know I saw, you know, LinkedIn articles and things about that in their consciousness. But that was really kind of refreshing and interesting to hear. So there's an expectation, yeah, for sure, from Gen Z coming in.
Yeah, so this would then also be a recommendation for companies who want to attract and keep talent, offer a growth and a mentoring plan and a career development plan.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean just throwing in, like, financial college credit or training support. I mean, it's got to be more substantial and meaningful than just saying, oh, if you want to go take some, you know, courses towards your master's, we'll split the tuition or whatever your policy is. They're looking for something more meaningful. They want to know, who am I shadowing and what skills are they going to help me grow? And do we have check-ins and how am I going to be held accountable actually? Like, really getting into that level of conversation is going to be required across the board.
Okay, great. So finally, for people who are just entering the field or starting their career in UX, are there any recommendations, maybe also for junior managers in the UX area that you would give or that you would like to had given to your younger self couple of years ago.
I don't know if this is not specific to just UX versus other types of design, but I think all of designers, we go through school and we learn a lot of tactical skills. And you need that. I mean, you need repetition and you need to understand the latest software, and you need to be able to execute on a deliverable. But what I would go back and do more of myself, and what I would recommend to others, is dig deeper into psychology and anthropology and understand human behavior. So yes, you can execute a beautiful solution, but understanding how 7 different personality types would approach that experience is more important than how fast it works.
Yeah.
So that's what I would recommend, is diving into personality types, cognitive types, high capacity, low capacity, cognitive aptitude. And that's, to me, the root of being able to be a good designer, is to consider those and then define what your product is, who it's meant for, what it's targeting, and how it's going to be perceived by different people, because everybody's different.
Yeah. Great advice. Great advice. So
thanks, Thomas.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. I think, yeah, those are great ending words. Thanks for being on the show, and yeah, talk to you soon, hopefully.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Likewise. Thanks. Bye.